हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, the category of quality, the 24 gunas. Right? Before we had the 9 drabyas, or the 9 substances. Now we have the 24 gunas, or the 24 qualities. Guna, quality, the second of the 7 categories of reality, cannot exist by itself, but exists only in a substance. Of 7 categories. Which is it say? Okay, second of 7. Okay, so these 7 are dravya substance, guna quality, karma, action, samanya generality. Oh, I see what happened. Yeah, samanya generality, vishesha uniqueness, samanvaya inheritance, and abhava non-existence. So now in quality. Guna, quality, the second of the 7 categories of reality, cannot exist by itself, but exists only in a substance. Right? It means the 9 dravyas, they can have qualities. Right? They don't stand on their own. In Vaisheshika, guna refers to quality, whereas in Shankhya, this term is used to denote an essential feature of Prakriti, nature. It cannot therefore be the constituent or material cause of anything's existence. Right? In other words, the guna can't be the cause of an existence. It can only be a quality of something that exists. Right? Because they're trying to establish what can create what comes from what. Does that make sense? You're trying to get all these different things established so you can actually see the hierarchy, what's where, what's this, the relationship between all that, then you can come to your conclusion. You know, whether the conclusion is good or not, it's another thing. But still, they have to go through this logical process. Right? All these different schools, they must be complete. It may be considered a non-material cause of things, however, because it determines the nature of a thing. It differs from both substance and action in that it is an unmoving property. There are 24 kinds of qualities. You could say it's a non-material cause, because then if that's the quality, then that's what the cause has to be. Right? But there, so these non-material, the thing is, so far I don't think it's described non-material. But in any case, is that, you know, where this non-material comes from. It means he has a quality, therefore then it has there. So strength is there. So then that would be the cause of that pillar. You know what I'm saying? You need the quality of strength, so therefore the pillar is built. But the quality is in relationship to the pillar. Right? So generally they're taking it because they're starting from atoms, so that the pillar itself would be more of the basis. Right? As opposed to Gotama, then he's working that you have this logic that's there. And by the nature of things, then that's how everything's working. So everything has its inherent nature. Here it's not so much as its inherent nature, because atoms have no, if you add quality to it, there's two things that can be broken down. Right? So they're looking at it in much more, less of a, let's say, kind of personal aspect. It's just, you know, Gotama is facts, but Vaisheshika seems to be more just the facts, you know, just what is there, is atomic theory. Okay. Okay, and we see it doesn't move. It doesn't. It does. It itself doesn't do something or is moved. It just exists. So the 24 kinds of qualities: color, rupa, color, rasa, taste, gandha, smell, sparsha, touch, shabda, sound. Right. So that's been the five qualities. But that's not the tongue or the sense or what is tasted. You understand? Because what the tongue and what is tasted, then those are made out of atoms, right? So this is something separate from that, is the quality that you have color. It can be perceived by the eye, and some form has color, right? Like that. Shankhya, number. Parimana, magnitudes. Like, you know, you have number, but then how great it is. Pritaktva, distinctness, right? It's that something is distinct from another. Otherwise, they're all merged together, right? Because the intelligence sees the difference and sees the commonality. So here's distinctness. Samyoga, conjunction or union. So these are the two qualities that the intelligence deals with, right? Vibhaga, separation. Paratva, remoteness. Aparatva, nearness. Buddhi, cognition. Sukha, pleasure. Dukkha, pain. Icha, desire. Dvesha, aversion. Prayatna, effort. Gurutva, heaviness. Dhravatva, fluidity. Sneha, viscidity. Samskara, tendency. Dharma, merits or values. So I guess in Icha they also have need. According to Vaisheshika, there are six colors: white, black, red, blue, yellow, and green. Okay, white, black, red, blue, yellow, and green. And there are also six tastes. Right, so I wonder why it's green instead of something else. Okay, six tastes: sweet, sour, bitter, pungent, astringent, and salty. So that we also agree with. Smell is divided into two categories, good and bad. And touch is divided into three, hot, cold, and neither hot nor cold. There are two kinds of sound, dvani, inarticulated, and varna, articulated. Number is that quality of virtue of which a thing can be counted. Many numbers starting from one and stretching out beyond the imagination are used, but actually there's only one number which is used as many. Right. In other words, there's one, and then you have two ones, you get two. You three ones, you get three. Four ones, you get four. Right? So would that mean, so then the question is, then by that principle, is that three is actually one plus one plus one, does that mean Jojo was actually into Vaisheshika? That would be the question. Okay. Magnitude is the quality by which things are distinguished as big or small. There are four orders of magnitude: extremely small, the atom; extremely big, small and large. Distinctness is the quality by which one knows that one thing is different from another. Conjunction or union is the quality by which one knows the existence of two or more things at one place or in one time, such as a book being on a table at noon. Disjunction or disunion is that quality by which a substance is perceived as being either remote or near in time or space. Older, younger, before and after are temporal examples. Far, near, here, there are spatial examples. Okay, so that's what you say, distinction. Okay, paratva. Okay, buddhi, a quality of the self, means knowledge or cognition. In Vaisheshika, and should not be confused with the concept of buddhi that is explained in Shankhya Yoga as intellect. Pleasure is, okay, in other words, it's not a process that's going on, right? Because intelligence then would be some process that's going on. Because here it is saying that it's not action. Well, intelligence is actually performing something of action. Well, here there simply means you're aware of it, right? There's knowledge of it, or there's awareness of it. Okay? So in other words, it's more of a state of being rather than an actual process. Pleasure is a favorable experience of mind, and pain is an unfavorable experience of mind. Effort is the quality by virtue of which a substance is capable of changing its position. There are three kinds of effort: striving towards something, pravritti; striving against something, nivritti; and vital functioning, jivana yoni. Heaviness is that quality by virtue which a substance is capable of falling, while fluidity is the quality by virtue of which it flows. Viscidity is the quality belonging exclusively to the element of water, by which different particles of matter can be absorbed and formed into particular shapes. Right. So they're having to find a definition that matches just the thing. Right? Yeah, it touches hot, cold, and neither hot or cold. Because those things are there, but if you say softness, but then softness is also there in light or something you see. Right? So there'd be an overlap. So it has to be things that are clearly only belong to those things. Right? Does that make sense? So all these definitions, like heaviness, you know, how would you say something's heavy? It says the quality by virtue of which a substance is capable of falling. Right? The heavier it is, the heavier, the more it falls, right? Like if it's very light, it doesn't fall. If it's too light, it floats away. You understand? So they're getting something that clearly defines it, because if you want to be logical, you have to have a very clear definition. Now, if their definition is complete, it's another thing, but you can't say that this is not clear. Right? You know, whether you'd want to define something in this way, that's another thing, but this is how they're defining it. Samskaras are innate tendencies. They can be of anything, not just the mind. There are three kinds of samskaras in a substance. Okay, samskaras is another word. Samskaras come in. Three kinds of samskaras in a substance. Oh, I see, a dharma. Maybe that's what they mean. Demerit or non-virtue. Dharma and, oh, no, samskara. Here is tendency. It's one of the things. Okay. Samskaras are innate tendencies. They can be of anything, not just the mind. There are three kinds of samskaras in a substance. Activity, which keeps a thing in motion, vega. Elasticity, which makes a thing tend towards equilibrium when it is disturbed. Stitistapaktva. No, pakatva. And mental impressions, which enable one to remember and recognize the thing, bhavana. Right? Okay. Okay. The activity which keeps the thing in motion, in other words, the vega, like the six vegas in the Upadeshamrita, means the pushing, so it makes things work. This last category is exclusive to the mind. Dharma and adharma mean, respectively, that which is in accordance with conscience and that which is not in accordance with conscience. Dharma leads to happiness, adharma leads to pain and misery. The remaining five categories of reality are only briefly described. Okay. Because these two will be the main. Your dravyas and your gunas will be your main. Right, your substance and the qualities of the substance. Like that. Okay, now karma. Okay. Karma, action, is viewed in the Vaisheshika school as being physical movement. But the term physical here refers to more than just bodily movements, because in Vaisheshika, mind is also considered to be a kind of substance. Just like quality, the second category of reality, action, also exists only in a substance that cannot exist by itself. It is, however, completely different from both quality and substance. The substance of a thing supports both quality and action. Quality is the static characteristics of things, and action is their dynamic character, which is regarded as the independent cause of their union and disunion. Action or movement is always dependent on substances, earth, water, fire, air, and mind. It is impossible to find action in the intangible substances, space, time, direction, and soul, because each is an all-pervading substance whose position cannot be changed. Right? It has to be in earth, water, fire, air, because those things, as atoms, aren't going to change and move or anything, so there would be no application. But as soon as they come together and form things of this world that we can see, then, and the mind is therefore then relating to those things, then action can have its effect. Right? But there is no action here, as he mentions, in time or space. Time, space, direction, and soul, because they're just existing. They don't have that position. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Kind of. Have we been talking rocket science for the last 2 weeks? Basically. Okay. There are five kinds of action. Upward, downward, inward, outward, and linear. The action of perceptible substances like earth, water, fire, and air can be perceived by the five senses. But not all of the actions of tangible substances can be perceived. The movement of the earth, for example, cannot be perceived. It can only be inferred. Okay, so now they're making a distinction between something that we can actually perceive because it's on a scale that we can relate to, or something that's so big that we can't understand it. Does that make sense? Okay. So in other words, if everything is clearly defined, then if you have a conversation, everything is clear. So then you can discuss about it. Right? So we can see that these Indian philosophies are so well defined that there's no problems in one sense in their definition according to their philosophy. Right? Their philosophy may be wrong, therefore their definitions aren't complete. But the point is that they're very well defined. Right? The category of generality, samanya. Generality, samanya, refers to an abstract characteristic that is singular and eternal, nitya, and yet pervades many. For example, leadership is a single characteristic, but it resides in many individuals. Leadership is also eternal because it was already in existence before the first leader emerged, and it will continue to exist even if there are no more leaders. All the things of a certain class, such as men or cows or puppies or horses, share a common name because of the common nature they possess. Samanya, generality, is the essence of the common characteristic that unites different entities into one class. Hence, modern scholars sometimes translate samanya as universality. We saw in Gotama, he also had the same thing. Generality means what generality didn't mean. It was just didn't really, you know, have any distinct character, but is that characteristic that applies to everything in that class. A generality is a quality by which you can group things. Right? So he's using the same thing here, the same definition. Vaisheshika recognizes three levels of generality or universality: highest, lowest, and intermediate. The highest kind of generality is existence itself, satta. Beingness, or the state of being, is the highest generality because all other universals are subsumed under it. It is all-pervading and nothing is excluded from it. It means, in other words, existence itself then everything else is in there because everything else is existing. So it's the biggest of all the elements of generality because everything fits into it. Right? Even all these seven aspects, they all fit into it. The lowest kind of generality has the most limited reference, such as Americanness, Indianness, potness, and chairness, which are the generalities present in all Americans, Indians, pots, and chairs, respectively. Concepts such as substantiality, having the nature of substances, represent the intermediate level of generality because they do not include many other categories of reality like quality, actions, and so on. Okay, and the nature of substances then are in intermediate because something like earth that has much more general qualities means much larger amount of things fit into it. But earth then makes things. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, from earth, then let's say you get cars, so you have carness, but it also makes trucks and the truckness, or vehicleness, you know, or it makes trucks and horses. So then, you know what I'm saying? In other words, the biggest thing is just the state of existence that everything is existing in. The smallest, then next down will be these dravyas themselves. Then their generality of them. Then because they're everywhere, everything's made from them. But they're still, you divided it into seven, like that. Then when you get down to specifics of what is made out of those elements or what is happening with those. Then you're going to get, then you're going to get the details. So it's much smaller. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? So if you're taking existence, then that's very big. So earth, water, fire, air fit into that, right? Then there's earth, water, fire, air. They have their qualities, then which are very general. So anything that has earth in it or water, fire, or air in it will have some of these qualities. Then you have specifics like a chair. So all chairs have the same quality of chairness. But they're only one thing that's made out of earth. Or you understand? Just make you understand the difference here? Yes? No? Somehow we get these very pleasant blank looks. Okay. Category of uniqueness. I think once we get into the higher philosophies, there'll be a little bit more for you to relate to. Vishesha, or uniqueness, is that characteristic of a thing by virtue of which it is distinguished from all other things, like the imperceptible substances of space, time, direction, soul, and mind. Vishesha is abstract and is therefore eternal. Therefore, everything in the world, regardless of whether it's existent or non-existent, is accompanied by uniqueness. Generality, samanya, and uniqueness, visesha, are opposite concepts. Oh, they're opposite concepts. Okay. Oh, okay. So, in other words, samanya, generality is like the element, the quality of, in other words, definition of the qualities that brings together so many things under that heading. Right? Like, say, earth is solid, so anything that's solid comes under that, so it brings everything together. While vishesha is uniqueness, which means that which sets it apart. You know, so therefore, earth and fire, they're unique because they're set apart. You know, or the chair and the car are set apart. In other words, it's the opposite. It's not that bringing it together, it's taking it apart. So also, these are activities of the mind. The mind brings things together and takes them apart. Right? Visesha and samanya, the mind also does that, accepts and rejects. It's just another form of that. Right? Yes.
What does it mean when it says vishesha is abstract and is therefore eternal?
Abstract means, you know, it means because it's the difference. It's not actually the substance. I mean, it is a substance, but you know, it has some meaning. But it means your samanya. It's also abstract.
means everything here is abstract. Probably means that it, besides having the, it's not just obviously it's sitting here, here's the rock, right? That would be concrete. Abstract means that there's something beyond just what's perceived by the sense. Right? In other words, the concept that holds all the things together or makes them all different. So that makes it abstract. But it has substance. Right? It's not that it's not there. Does that make sense? Yeah? That makes sense. The category of inherence, samavaya. There are two kinds of relationships between things. Conjunction, samyoga, and inherence, samavaya. Conjunction is one of the 24 qualities, gunas of Vaiseshika. Okay. But inherence is one of the seven categories of reality described in the system. Conjunction is a temporary, non-eternal relationship between two things that may be separated at any time. In this kind of relationship, two or more things exist together, but each remains essentially unaffected by the other. For example, when a chair and a table are conjoined together, this does not change the existence of the chair or the table. Thus, conjunction is an eternal relationship existing as an accidental quality of the substances related to it. Inherence, on the other hand, is a permanent relation between two entities, one of which inheres in the other, as, for example, in the relation of the whole in its parts, a quality in its substance, or the universal in the individual. A conjunctional relation is temporary and is produced by the action of either or both of the things related to it. For example, the relationship between a man and a chair on which he is sitting is temporary. An inherent relationship, in contrast, is not temporary and is not produced. The relationship that exists between a whole and its parts, for instance, is not produced because the whole is always related to its parts. As long as the whole is not broken up, it must exist in the parts. This inherence is an eternal or permanent relation between two entities, one at which depends for its existence upon the other. The whole cannot exist separate from its parts. Two terms within an inherent relationship cannot be reversed, as can those that are related by conjunction. For example, in order for there to be a conjunctional relation of hand and pen, pen and hand, must both be in some kind of contact with each other. But in an inherent relationship, this is not necessary. A quality or action is in a substance, but the substance is not in the quality or action. There is color in cloth, but no cloth in color. There is action in a fan, but no fan in action. Okay, so inherent means like you have a machine and then all the parts of that machine. So they are related to each other. Well, conjunction means they come together. They don't change each other, but they have a natural relation. But that relationship is temporary. Well, the other one is they don't exist without each other. Does that make sense? Right? So that's your inherence. So that would mean your samanya is your characteristic that all things in that category fit together. But this is where different categories can be related to each other. Right? Means means you're bringing it together, conjunction. Right? Can be the thing. Or it's like you have the universe that's made up of all of its parts. You have the 14 planetary systems, and that makes up the universal order. So they're not separated. Does that make sense? But at the same time is that in the inheritance it means, but it's not that one is, it means your, how you say? The planets are within the universe, but the universe isn't in the planets. Right? but they have an inherent relationship. Does that make sense? You know, your body has a hand, but the hand isn't the body. Does that make any sense? Okay. The category of non-existence. Okay. So probably if you thought this other stuff was strange, now we're going to define non-existence as a substance. Abhava, non-existence, the seventh and last category of reality, is negative in contrast to the first six categories, which are positive. Non-existence is not found in any of the six positive categories. And yet, according to Vaisheshika philosophy, non-existence exists, just as, for instance, space and direction do. To illustrate, how does one know that there is no chair in a room? Looking into the room, one can feel as sure of the non-existence of the chair as of the existence of the carpet or of the people. Therefore, non-existence also exists as such. You understand? It's not that something's non-existent. It means that, yeah. In other words, something not being there has as much substance to you as something being there. You know what I'm saying? Let's just like say you are expecting some support. Some devotees are going to come and give you help in something. And they're not showing up. That non-existence of the devotees in that situation then is very real and tangible to you. Right? And because of that, so many emotions come up. It affects so many different things. Does that make sense? So that's his how he's defining that. So it still is something experienced. There are two kinds of non-existence. The absence of something in something else, samsaragabhava, and mutual non-existence, anyonyabhava. The absence of something in something else is of three kinds. Right? Okay, so absence of something means this thing is not in that. Means you have this substance, there's no sweet in it. Okay, it's salty, there is no sweet. So absence, so sweet is absent, or non-existence in that substance. Right? And mutual non-existence means they have nothing to do with each other anyway. Absence of something and something else, three kinds. Antecedent non-existence, pragbhava, the non-existence of a thing after its destruction, pradvamsabhava, and absolute non-existence, adyantabhava. Antecedent non-existence refers to the non-existence of a thing prior to its creation. For example, in the system, sentence, a book will be written using this paper. The book is non-existent in the paper. This type of non-existence does not have a beginning, but it does have an end. The book never existed before it was written. Therefore, there is a beginningless non-existence of the book. Right? But when it does come to be written, its previous non-existence will come to an end. Right? In direct contrast to antecedent non-existence, the non-existence of a thing after its destruction has a beginning but does not have an end. For instance, when a jar is broken into pieces, then there is non-existence of that jar, right? Because you can't call it a jar anymore. It's non-existent. The jar, as you knew it, is non-existence. But at the same time as what we were talking before, the category, samanya, the category of jarness still remains, even though that manifestation is no longer there. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. The non-existence of the jar begins with its destruction, but this non-existence cannot be ended in any way, because the same jar cannot be brought back into existence. So in other words, one had a beginning, no beginning, you know, and then there's an end to that non-existence. The other one, it had an existence, then it ends, so you can't change that. Right? The type of non-existence does not belong to a particular time and space, but is in all times. Is called absolute non-existence. This type of non-existence is neither subject to origin nor to end. It is both beginningless and endless. Examples are the non-existence of the son of a barren couple, or the non-existence of color in the air. And they just don't exist. Right? Does that make sense? So there's no beginning. It wasn't that it was there and now it's not, or it's not there but it can be. It just never was and never will be. Does that make sense? Mutual non-existence. Mutual non-existence, anyonya bhava, the second of the two major divisions of non-existence, is the difference of one thing from another. When one thing is different from another, they mutually exclude each other. And there is the non-existence of either as the other. For example, a pen is different from a book. So there is non-existence of the book and the pen, and of the pen and the book. Right? Does that make sense? So that way you can perfectly define. So you can't expect, if someone expects something to happen, just like, let's say, the man expects that the woman's going to do this particular activity that women never do. Right? And the woman is expecting the man to do activities that men don't do. You understand? So therefore then there's this problem of this element of mutual non-existence. Right? It's not there. The two are different. And they don't have the quality of the other. Each judges the other by the quality of themselves and expects that quality is in the other. You know, just like you have a child and they do something wrong, you expect them to be more mature, and why are you being so stupid and so playful? Can't you see that it causes problems? But the point is that maturity that's in an adult is non-existent in a child. Does that make sense? And that childness, or you know, that unresponsible childness that is non-existent in an adult. Right? Now, so therefore, one would say, so is adultness defined in this case, example, by age? Or is it by maturity and responsibility? Because you could have an older person who is not very responsible, right, and doesn't take things seriously. Or you could have a young person who is very mature and very responsible. Right? Does that make sense? So since basically childness, you know, if you say childishness is a quality, or adultness or maturity is a quality, so therefore each one excludes the other. Does that make sense? So it's very important, because you can see a lot of these kind of things, because they're so well defined, then that would mean that someone would be very clear in their thinking. The only point is they'll be very clear in their thinking, very down to earth, very straightforward, you know, like that. But, as I think we're going to find out now, is that they may be completely off the wall when it comes to how they apply this or use this. The concept of creation and annihilation of the world. So now it's, okay, all that's been established. Now that's their definition of the field of activities. Now, what do you do with that, and what's the result and the goal? Now we'll find out these things. Vaisheshika holds to the atomic theory of existence, according to which the entire universe is composed of eternal atoms. But at the same time, Vaisheshika does not ignore the moral and spiritual laws that govern the process of union and separation of atoms. Right? In other words, he's looking at it just as the atomic theory is that everything's just atoms, but at the same time, he doesn't ignore that there are laws, both, you know, moral and spiritual, that is the cause of everything coming together or separating. Right? It means why those atoms will come together and create things, and why they uncreate things. Right? So in other words, something comes together, there's laws governing it. So there's higher spiritual laws, and then there's how you're supposed to deal with them, the moral laws. Right? Which comes back to that dharma and adharma of the mind. right? In this way, the atomic theory of Vaisheshika is different from the atomic theory of modern science. Modern science's theory proposes a materialistic philosophy. It explains the laws of the universe as mechanical, as being the result of the motions of atoms in different time, space, and direction. But why would they be in motion? Right? Since motion is another thing. You understand? By this, what would put them into motion? Because the atom itself is indivisible. So why would it be moving and combining with something else, since it's eternally indivisible? Why would it combine? Unless there's higher laws. Unless there's something in control. But the modern theories are basically trying to say that just the mechanics that they're doing this, but why would they do it? What would be the inspiration? Nothing moves without some inspiration. Does that make sense? According to this view, the operation of the atoms is governed by mechanical laws, but who's created those laws? But according to Vaisheshika, the functioning of atoms is guided or directed by the creative or destructive will of the Supreme Being. The will of the Supreme Being directs the operation of atoms according to the past samskaras of the individual beings. So here he's saying is that then according to someone's samskaras, right? It means whatever they think is right and wrong and all that, then, or what is their desires? He gave three kinds of samskaras here, right? Or with samskaras. Samskaras. Okay, three kinds. Activity which keeps a thing in motion, vega. Elasticity which makes a thing tend towards equilibrium when it's disturbed. And mental impressions. So depending upon, you know, one's drive, one's mental impressions, how you're trying to balance everything, how you're trying to pull together all these different desires, then that, according to that, then the Supreme Will is moving the atoms and making everything work. Right? So then, you know, it has some correct element there. Vaisheshika states that the universe has two aspects, one eternal and one non-eternal. The eternal constituents of the universe are the four kinds of atoms, earth, water, fire, and air, and the five substances, space, time, direction, mind, and self. These are not subject to change, and they can be neither created nor destroyed. Another part of the universe is non-eternal, that is, subject to creation and destruction in a particular time and spaces. In the beginning of creation, two atoms are united into a jyad, which is non-eternal because it can be divided again into two. The jyads and atoms cannot be perceived but are known through inference. The combination of three jyads is called a triad, which is the smallest perceptible object. So that means three. That means, okay, two atoms makes a dyad. So then three dyads, that will mean six atoms. That's the smallest possible thing you can see. Which is the smallest, it is from these triads that other larger compounds develop. Thus the common elements comprised of eternal atoms are non-eternal because they can be broken down into smaller units. Right? So that would create all your different things. You have your earth atoms, so depending on how they're combined together, then you get all these different elements that they'll talk about. Right? So, yeah. But they're non-eternal because they can be broken down. So we see that when we have all these different elements that are there, they're not necessarily understanding that there's more involved there because they take it just as these nine. But in one sense, because they take the mind as one of them, then from there philosophically, you can get out all the other aspects. So those aspects are there in the material energy as pradhan, which always exists. But the point is then at some point, by the supreme will of the Lord, according to the particular karma of the living entities, the desires of the living entities, then the material world is manifest. So its manifestation is then when all those different atoms are all put together, and then it's manifest, and then at some point then they're all broken apart, and then it goes back to its... Does that make some sense? Yes. No, okay. You understand? So the thing is it's a very mechanical explanation, which is based on the Veda and can define the things. So generally we use a much broader definition, so it comes out. And we its emphasis is on that relationship with that Supreme. Right? So the relationship between the Supreme Living Entities and the material energy, that's much more brought out. Well, in here, the emphasis is on the atoms themselves, as opposed to the Supreme Will or the Living Entities. Does that make sense? Okay, classes that we wouldn't get farther. Okay, so we'll continue this. Next Thursday. All right? Week. Okay? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.